This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with SharePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScope.co.uk and discover the advantage.
Hello and welcome to the Twin Peaks Investing Podcast. My name is Peter Higgins and you can find me at Conkers3 on Twitter. And I'm here with my colleague, Wheelie Dealer on Twitter, at Wheelie Dealer. And I'm here with a special guest. We've got Ben at Gold Left Massa, our special guest today. You'll be talking about some small cap shares and some innovative companies. I think it's going to be very interesting because we've got some significant volatility going on in the blue chip space. So to navigate that sort of space, we've got a specialist here in Ben, who's been doing it for quite a few years very, very well. So Ben, welcome, mate.
Thank you. Thanks for having me. Obviously, I listened to your podcast now for many years. Well, it seems like many years, and I don't know how long you've been doing it, but it's gone are the days where one of you was in either ear.
Yeah, Pete and I had hair when we started, mate. That's how much stress this podcast causes. So, no, thank you ever so much for coming on, mate. The reason why I wanted to bring you on the show, and we only had a guest on the last podcast as well, was because of the volatility that's going on in the market. But also, what I love about your Twitter handle is that you're not scared of asking appropriate, if not difficult, questions to whomever it may be. And I think what happens a lot of the time, people shy away from asking difficult questions and just, you know, melt into the background and say, oh, I'm not going to get involved. And I think it's important that we all ask questions of each other because there's too much conformity. And what happens with the market a lot of the times is that people are losing money and losing their confidence regarding investing because shares are getting spanked left, right and center, but they've gone into various stocks because of somebody else's idea. It's like, well, what led you to get into that stock? What was the reasons why? Well, I bought it because Fred said, because Andrew said, because John said. It's like, no. You need to have bought a stock or a fund or whatever because you researched it and decided it was a good idea, not because of somebody else. So that's the reason why I've got you on here today with Wheelie as well, for us to be able to talk about some of the nuances of the market, things to look out for, traps, red flags, and so on and so forth. So we're going to delve into that. First, Pete and I are going to talk a bit about the markets, mate. So join in and tell us what your thoughts are regarding the market. Loads of volatility. And I think it was a couple of podcasts ago before, Pete and I were getting into a debate. Some people said we were arguing. We're like married couples. We don't argue. We have a debate, don't we, Pete?
we have a heated discussion.
And the debate was around Boris Johnson. I'm going to be keeping this short and sweet. I don't want to have a political rant or spend too much time on this, Ben, right? But the conversation was, Wheelie was talking about, we're going to go through this process of blah, 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 blah. It's going to take ages. And I was saying, Pete, but what if Boris resigns? What if he resigns? Pete, no, that's not going to happen. And if it does happen, it's going to take months. Boris has now resigned. The process is going to get changed. I'm not sure how long it's going to take, but I'm assuming, right, that at some point or other, Boris will be gone before we get to October. First, thoughts, Pete, your thoughts on that?
Well, they're saying 5th of September is when we will have a new leader. And they're talking about whittling down to the last two, literally within days, you know. So it'll then go to the membership and the last two have the hustings. The really interesting thing is who it's going down to. That's the fascinating bit. Because Rishi's been the front runner. We're recording this on Wednesday, the 13th of July, and they've just had the 5 o'clock announcement of two people who dropped out, which were Nadim and Jeremy Hunt. I keep calling him James Hunt, which I suppose is better than calling him something else that he got called. Rishi's been the front runner, but you can almost see a situation where Rishi doesn't even get through to the main two. His campaign seems to be losing momentum, even though he got the most votes. So it's really interesting, and it looks like it's really down to Rishi, Liz Truss, or Penny Mordaunt, and it's going to be one of those three. And I'd say it's probably going to be Penny Mordaunt if I had to bet on it.
What happened to Tim? What happened to Tim?
Tim who?
Tim, the ex-forces guy.
Tom Tugendhat.
I'm sorry.
Tom Tugendhat. Well, you need more than two guns and a hat, mate, to win this one.
I was going to call him TT because I can't pronounce his surname, but that's just me. You know. Ben, your thoughts on all this shenanigans and all the grief that's it's caused?
It's quite mad to watch, isn't it? It's borderline embarrassment just the way it's gone. I'm not surprised Rishi's already struggling. If you jump out of the ship at the very, very last minute and then immediately try and captain another ship, you jumped out of a sinking one, you're not going to have you on board somewhere else within a day. You know, you're going to have to start again. And I think he probably will likely go away and have to regroup for a significant time. It's just madness. I find it quite embarrassing. Difficult to watch and try and distance myself from it a little bit, because I don't think there's a lot to be gained by following it. It all seems very self-serving and it was shambolic. But hopefully it draws a line, and from September onwards, like Wheelie says, we can move forward and have a bit of an idea what the next couple of years look like, because there's never been a time where we need a more united government than we do now. All parties have avoided the chance of working together when they should have been working together, which was after the Brexit vote and after the COVID pandemic. You know, in a sensible environment, you'd all get together, you do the best for the country, with a promise that when you come out of it, you do a vote to decide what happens going forward. But that was never going to happen, and it's just a shame that was never even mentioned. It was never considered. It was all about their own interests, and it's a poor reflection of what politics. I don't know whether it's always been this way or what it is now or whether it's changed. I don't know, but it's certainly more in the limelight now. It's not great to watch.
It seems worse now. That's all I will say. It definitely seems worse now.
It does. I think it's because we've entered an era of showbiz or populist politicians. You know, you've got to be super popular, and it's like, if you might be popular for all the wrong reasons, and actually we probably need somebody completely opposite to Boris going forward, and that might be Penny, you know. I'm thinking, you know, as a neutral, who would I want? Why not have Penny? Why not have a woman leading the party? So we'll see what happens with regards to that. Could do with somebody doesn't know rather than everybody knows, and actually can actually deliver on some policies. But it should be all going forward. It should all be about what are you actually going to do? What are the policies? Forget about the rhetoric. What are you going to do? You know, don't just choose people on noise. Choose them on what they're going to actually do, and then see if they follow through. If they don't start following through on what they said they were going to do, which hasn't happened, you know, going to get this done and that done. What's actually happened since 2016, 2018, 2020? Not a lot really has been achieved. So
it's a party.
Let's see who can actually deliver something.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I mean, I always say the economy and the markets do well in spite of government, not because of. And I think there's a lot of truth to that. And so to a large extent, I think it's window dressing to some extent. And that really what's determining the economic environment is the Ukraine situation, the inflation in food, the inflation in energy, you know, and all these kind of problems that are sort of external and every country faces. And I think, you know, until those kind of pressures, and obviously this is something that hits me, that I think the dislocation coming out of COVID-19 has caused a lot of problems. And I think it was evident in the GDP figures that actually came out today, the GDP for May. Now, the forecasters have been expecting flat. It actually came out positive 0.5%. So that's much better than expected. So you sort of think it's so unpredictable because of this dislocation. And no one's ever done this before. No one's turned their economies off and then turned them on again. And by the way, had a war and, you know, all the other countless million crazy things that are going on.
Absolutely. Now, I'm just going to quickly cover the markets. We're only going to do two this time. And I'm going to touch on the AIM because we've got our AIM chap here in Ben. FTSE 100, Pete, finished at 7156. It's been absolutely volatile past month or so. Month high of 7,360. And we touched a month low of 7,025, really on the cusp of that thin bit of ice around the time we were recording last week on the 5th of of July, 7,025. FTSE AIM All Share has been getting absolutely walloped up for the last 12 months, and it touched a low of 866 again on the 5th of July, and month high of 918 on the 15th of June, and it's currently closed at 879. So everywhere is sitting near its lows. What are your thoughts on the markets, Ben, at the minute?
It's a tough one. I mean, I'm very much look at the micro picture and try and distance myself from the macro as much as I can. But there's only so much you can mentally do that when you're watching the whole market's grind. I mean, it's just a grind. Everything feels so uncertain. It just, no one seems to. Even people that predict very confidently don't sound very confident at the moment when they're saying it. And that's a telling sign. No one's really, it's just uncertain. And until we come out of this period, I don't see it changing. We have these little rallies. I think we had one end of last week, a little rally that looked promising, and it just seems to be being sold into again. And any sort of event that happens seems to result in quite a lot of risk coming back off the table. So it's tough to watch at the moment. I try and distance myself from it. But, when you see your portfolio in red and then you look at your watch list and it's in red, and then you look outside your watch list, it's in red, you kind of have to accept there's something going on and decide how you're going to handle it. Tough to watch.
I think there's an interesting one about whether you ignore the bigger markets or not. I'm of a view that the bigger markets they set the weather. Is that right? No, they set the climate and the individual stocks are the weather. And I think at the moment, the overall climate is basically a bear market in pretty much everything. FTSE 100 has been one of the few indexes globally that's actually done not that bad. It might even be up for the year on a total return basis. But everything else, it's just a very clear bear market downtrend. I think that's going to dominate until it doesn't. You know what I mean? It's, all these predictions are funny because the predictions are like, oh, yeah, it's good. The FTSE 100 is going to go to 5,000. I rarely make a prediction like that. All I can say is I think it's going to go lower. It's hard for me to say where it's going to stop. But I'm just really cautious. I'm hedged at the moment, and I really got very close to hedging more last night, but because of my health problems, it sort of distracted me. I've sort of come to the conclusion it's not wise and sensible to make trading decisions when you're not feeling well, because you just don't make good decisions. So I thought, no, I'm feeling pretty rough. Let's just leave it. It'll be what it will be. Tomorrow the markets will be up or they will be down. Whether I put a short on last night or not doesn't really make that much difference. I can still put one on tonight or tomorrow night or the night after or whatever. I've still got the option. So I just sat with what I've got and away you go.
Okay. Ben, I want to introduce you, even though you've been speaking for a little while now, to our listeners, right? I want you to tell them a little bit about yourself, maybe a little bit about what you do, and then talk about a little bit about how and why you got into investing. So a little bit of an intro, then I'm going to fire a couple of questions at you and Peter's as well.
No worries. I mean, I came into investing quite late. So I've worked in and around the insolvency sector for a scary long time, about 15 years now. I think it was in the start of the...
You're not that old. You cannot be that old.
I feel it at times. It's about 15 years I worked in insolvency, and I've had an interest in personal finance and things like that for years, and things around that, match betting, cashback sites, side jobs, part-time jobs since I was in school. Always had that, and somehow just avoided shares and investments. And I don't know whether it points to not being educated in it, not being exposed to it, not having a mentor or anyone that pushed me in the direction. I didn't come into it until 10, 12 years ago, maybe, where I dabbled. Typical story, you've heard it probably a million times, is oil and gas, speculative oil and gas plays, spreadsheet millionaire, type X times 20, you end up with, I'm going to be retired on a boat by next year, the typical stuff. I did that for a little while, got quite obsessed with a couple of stocks in there that didn't perform well at all, and they were roller coaster rides, and then started to realize there's something beyond what I'm doing. I need to have a reset. So I sort of reset into October 17, really, I sort of stopped what I was doing and started to do it differently. And that doesn't mean all of a sudden I went from being a terrible investor to good. I probably went from terrible to being less terrible, and then started my journey, took it properly, started records, started actually having a portfolio rather than punting on an oil and gas play, and have gone from there.
And was that when I first sort of met you? Because I remember you came to a wheelie bash some years ago. I remember speaking to you. You were there before anybody else. I think it was just you and me and one other or something were there early on.
I think it would have been about 18, maybe October 18, October 19. There was sort of that transition phase where you move away from doing what I was doing to actually taking it more seriously and reaching out. And I think it was when, and you noticed then that sort of, you found Twitter as a tool then, and sort of FinTwit and everything has to offer, and start to broaden your horizons to not just some of the characters that you first run into when you join Twitter, especially the end of the market that I am. So you had that, I think I had that first phase where, you know, you're listening to certain podcasts, you're listening to certain people, and I sort of moved on from that. So yeah, that's where, so the journey sort of evolved over 5 years from there. That's my point where I sort of taken it seriously and realised there's something here I enjoy.
It's very interesting, Ben, that you've said that you went away from that roller coaster ride of almost trading. I think you're insinuating trading more than investing, to now moving towards investing, where you're looking for things, stocks, etc., that you can invest in for a longer period. You're not looking for a quick, you know, like some people do, looking for things that are happening over a short time frame. You're looking to actually do the research, buy, to see them actually progressing over a longer period of time. Is that what's happened?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it wasn't so much it wasn't short term before, because I was all in one stock, and it was wanting to do 20 times. You know, I wanted 100, 200, no, sorry, 1,000, 2,000%. You know, that's what I was dreaming of.
Wow.
On one or
it's
two
great
players.
Who were you listening to? Who were you listening to then, back then?
No, to be fair.
No, don't say.
No, to be fair as well, that was before I found out about different ways of researching shares. I didn't even know about Pocket. It was limited to bulletin boards then. And there was no science behind it. It was better, looking back, it was just betting. It was just gambling to me, what were quite significant chunks of money then, on very speculative plays. So it was actually when I got exposed.
Ben, do you think that being involved in gambling and betting before helps you or hinders you? Is there the risk that it means that you take too much risk? Or
that's a great question.
Or are there skills from gambling and that actually applied to what you're doing investing?
Actually, I think, yeah, it's a brilliant question, and I think there are skills, and I didn't possibly transfer them across, because I did something called it's not around so much now, but it was like match sort of arbitrage betting and things around that at the time. And actually that's betting when you've got an edge, and when you've either got an edge, mathematical edge, or you can lock in profit by arbitraging, as you see occasionally in shares on across different exchanges and things like that. So actually there, that was very controlled. The records were kept. I was only ever playing where I believed I had an edge, a mathematical edge, and that wasn't what I was doing with investing. It was that version of investing. That was equivalent of a punt on a 30-1 horse, and you could see that it was missing a leg. Well, actually, you could even see it missing a leg. That's probably a better analogy. You know, it might have 8 legs, but it's probably got 2, and there's probably a farm with the shotgun right behind. So it was betting blind, and I didn't know there was a community out there, not got exposed to that. So, and then through that, it was coming into realizing there's a community like yourselves with the Wheelie Bash, FinTwit, everything like that that goes with it. And yeah, you've got murky areas of that world, but it's you start to realize there's more to it and actually enjoy it, and there's got a lot of work to put in. And I wasn't putting the work in before. You were just gambling on topics I didn't know anything about, you know, basically, or very, very little about.
It's interesting that you said that you're now putting the work in, because Wheelie and I are always talking about the amount of time that actually needs to be put into research and find out about a company. But I think, you know, we're here in July 2022. There's still this issue, I think, for many people who are either reluctant or will always say, I haven't got the time to do it. And I fully understand that some people are working full time. You're working full time, right? Haven't got the time. You know, they've got other commitments. You know, got family, got kids, got pets, this, that, the other. Got, you know, elder relatives that they've got to look after and parents they've got to look after. But for the ones that have got the time, that still don't do the research, I find it really disconcerting, quite concerning, in fact, because I'm thinking, you know what, if you're buying a car, if you're buying a house, even if you're buying, you know, the next phone, right, you're going to spend quite a lot of time working out which was the best bit of gadget or the best whatever it is. Going on Twitter for 5 minutes, going to the person that you've always followed on trend, that's usually a good stock picker or a good trader, to say X, Y, Z has said I bought that, and then 5 minutes later lumping $5,000 on it. I'm like, ooh, why is it that people are still doing that, especially on the AIM stuff where you frequent, Ben? Why are people still doing it?
I do wonder if it's a mix. There's laziness. There's obviously a factor of laziness there. Like you said, there's always time. If you haven't got the time at all, you generally haven't, because life's too pressured, then you should be looking at funds, trackers, passive investments. You know, there's a whole array of things. If you've got the time, then I think you really need to be, there is time to spend. And it can be like, if you look at half an hour every single day, if you spend half an hour of your time when you're scrolling on iPad, reading for a report, that's 3.5 hours a week just there. That's for 15 hours a month. You know, that adds up to some serious time. So it's some laziness. And I think it's a fear as well. People don't want to put themselves into the unknown. And, you know, when you're reading annual reports, when you're reading RNSs, sometimes you're in the unknown and you don't know what you're doing. So you're just shy away from that side. And actually, the only way you're going to do is get better is just by keep delving in and doing some work around it. And it might mean that you don't pump £5,000 on that stock 20 minutes after you heard of it. It might be that you watch it for 6 months and then make a decision. And I'd say 50% of the time, you'll get a better entry 6 months later. And more importantly, you will have 6 months of knowledge, even if it's collected in little bits and pieces. I know Wheelie is an advocate of, you know, how many shares he knows, because it's just been on his watch list, or it's been in and around the markets for so long.
Exactly. I mean, you know, I've got stocks that I've followed for years, stocks I've owned myself before. And, you know, once you have that experience and that knowledge of these stocks, it almost becomes like a database in your head. And it means that you can save a lot of time by just not bothering with certain companies, and it can shortcut you into getting into the good ones. And I think the other thing worth saying, if you're strapped for time, one of the things to think about is how to optimize what you're doing. Really analyze what you're doing. So if you can't spend so much time on research, think, right, well, how can I short circuit that? What, you know, it could be that there's only certain things that really matter that drive a share price. Spend time trying to figure that out and work out what really drives things, and just try to find ways of just working more effectively, so you're not wasting time, and that might even free up time to do a bit more research.
Absolutely. Sorry.
Go on, Ben. Go on.
No, I was going to say that is it. And there's so many ways you can filter down. There's so many stocks, there's so many markets, there's so many sectors. There's a million ways where you can filter down what you're looking at, and you can waste a lot of time. I've done it. I'm spending time looking back at stocks that you will never, ever purchase. But you get a bit obsessed with them and following them and what they're up to. I think you just got to draw a line and take them off your watch list, take them away, and just focus on, you know, filter down what you believe you're looking for and what drives you. And try and make that work less. You're trying to cover the whole market, if you chuck in the US market or other foreign markets, unless you're full time or you've got a lot of time on your hands, you're just going to run into trouble.
Ben, you tend to focus on miners, don't you, these days? Small miners, is that right?
It was just where I was going to go with my next question regarding your style, Ben. And firstly, the research that you do, and the sector that you predominantly orientate yourself into, because it's not going to be for everybody. And this is why we've got you on the show, because we're trying to cover as many different investors as possible. There's going to be some people going to go, oh, he's going to talk about miners and AIM POS stocks for the next half an hour. Hopefully that's not going to be the case, but we don't know. Let's just talk about your style, your research style first, and how you filter it down, and then some of the stocks that you've chosen, and more importantly, why.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've been in the resource sector probably since I came in. I don't know whether it was a comfort zone when I originally came in, but I haven't really ever had the desire to filter away from it. Amazing. There are things I've touched on outside of the resource sector, but, you know, I believe we're in a time where major mining companies haven't been investing in exploration for a long time. And they're going to run into deficits on copper, nickel, a whole array of metals. They're going to be needed. And that's why I've kind of stuck around it. And I understand that, you know, over time, you start to learn just by being in the markets, you start to learn more and more about what to watch for, the red flags, the concerns. I was just thinking about it before, knowing that was coming on a day yesterday. And one of the things that comes out is just expecting in the resource sector, you know, management will let you down. They will let you down time.
Every sector.
And I think that's, and once you realize that, they're human, there is a lot of factors outside of their control. And we've seen a world where things have been out of management's control in a lot of ways. So you realize they will let you down. Even the best ones will. They'll raise money on terms you did not expect. They'll have delays to projects because they can't get permits. They can't get their timing right. They'll overpromise and then under-deliver. Every company and management will let you down, even the good ones. So yeah, that's one of the things to realize. So it's been a sector that I've learned more and more about just by being in it for so long, and so many red flags, and you just have to be so selective. It's not for everyone, and it shouldn't be. You've got to want to sort of hang around the industry and delve in sort of murky waters at times, if for want of a better word.
Okay, so first, I think we'll start with the bad first. So tell us one of the examples where you went in, you've done your research, management was saying, we've got this, and it didn't quite pan out.
So
an example?
I'm trying to think of one. There's quite a few over my time. I'm trying to think of one that's actually recent. One company that I got involved in when I first started sort of reset back in 17 was copper mine, Asian Met Resources, which is still quite a popular among PIs. And I got in there. I can't remember now. It would be about 5 or 6 pence, say. And it went very, very went quickly. Went to 14, 15, 16 pence. You know, I thought I was brilliant. You know, this is great. You know, I'm spending my time researching because I had researched it. Probably relied a little bit too much on what the company was saying. But, you know, I'd done my research and it was paying off. And then you watch this steady decline. And if you look at the chart now, it is just a steady decline downwards.
I couldn't remember what the EPIC code was. And I just looked it up and it's ARS. ARS.
It's not. And that's another. It's ours, not that you just said, Peter.
It's another company.
Carry on, man. Sorry.
Yeah, it's another company where, you know, the management, I'm sure, have the very best intentions. There's no fraud going on. From what I can see, you know, no fraud going on. There's no brown envelopes flying around. It's just difficult. It's just a difficult sector, difficult jurisdiction. And I didn't appreciate that when I came in. I didn't appreciate the macro. Copper was in that time in a really difficult place. And then you're in a real difficult jurisdiction. No one wants to spend money on them. Then COVID hit, and they've just gone along a really difficult road in the time I own them. And that one,
Ben. Sorry, can I ask two questions on that? You know, we were talking earlier about how the indexes set the weather. With miners, it's in a way a sort of similar thing, that the price of the metals, in this case copper, is the climate, and that sets the weather to a large extent for Asian Met Resources. And then the other thing is that I imagine, looking at what's happened to the share price, and you'd said that it has just, you know, been nasty, I imagine it's done placing after placing after placing. Is that what's happened?
They have done a few fundraisers. I mean, the worst probably was that around about the penny level in March, April, when, you know, most companies were panicking, but they gave a chunk of the company away at the same time to someone that they wanted to, that they were hoping would then fund them into exploration, and that relationship turned sour. And that, of course, you're locked in then, so then you're again forced to make another mistake to get out of the mistake you've already made. And that carries on. I can't quite remember now when I exited. And it still might turn good for investors, but I think to use Peter's example, that is my, I picked it at the height and I rode it all the way down and just watched it. You know, I didn't pick my entry point. I didn't do risk at the top. And then I just watched it step down without taking any real action along the way. So yeah, that's an example of somewhere that's gone wrong, and not a company that was fundraising unnecessarily. It wasn't I don't believe a lifestyle company, you know, is just genuinely a difficult company.
Do you tend to top slice these days?
Yes, I will take risk off the table. I mean, if we touch on what my portfolio has done this year, I didn't, and I suffered from it from there, but I will take risk off the table. One of my companies, I took a risk off the table this week, simply because they've been featured in a Daily Mail article or the Sunday Mail article. I've made a great return on it since I re-entered it. It was time just to slice a bit. But what I've done this time is just sliced 25% of that particular holding, because previously I've immediately sliced 50%, and then I've left myself no flexibility then to do anything else with, because I want to hold the company. But then if it carries on running, it's difficult.
Do you have a rule? Do you have like a rules-based thing where it's like, I always cut 25%, then I'll cut another 25%, whatever. Do you tend to do that?
No, not a set rule. It's maybe okay. Something I need to think about and factor in. I try not to commit to rigid rules, because they're all such unique little beasts, for want of a better word. And also, it's, you know, you're normally reacting to news or sentiment, and sometimes news can set you up, can set a new foundation under a share. You know, if you get a partnership on board or you get some funding, all of a sudden it puts some foundations in, so then you've got some time. Other times when things are just running away, actually it is time just to take a slice off the top. But not too much. I was taking probably a hacksaw to it at times. Mm. And then you've got nothing to do. If it carries on running, you're kind of locked in, because you want to hold the rest of the 50%.
And you're really upset.
Yeah,
absolutely. So tell us what. So that's an example of one that didn't quite work out, despite the management being okay. And, you know, obviously placings were impacted because of jurisdictions and macro problems. Tell us about one of them that's gone well, that you might still be holding, and you've got aspirations that they're going to do even better going forward.
Yeah, actually, one of the companies, I'll touch on the company that I just mentioned, I sliced this week, just a small chunk, which is Harvest Minerals. So they're a little fertilizer company in Brazil. Management are...
HMI.
They are... management are not well-loved across Twitter, because they join the market. You'll see it from the chart that they join the market in hype, hope and potential. Got an amazing, in hindsight, placing away, I think at the time, around the 12-18 P level, you know, really high. It was going to be the next big thing, but everyone kind of forgot that you don't build a business overnight. It takes years to build the business. So I got in too early. It went down. It carried on going down. It went from 18 pence to, I think, the lowest was about 2p. I'd exited quite a while before and then bought in around the 2, 3, 4p level. I think my average is about 3p from the re-entry. And it sits at, and they've just turned now. So the sales have steadily increased through the period. The cash has been going down. So that's always caused a bit of a drag on the share price, because people are like, well, when's the next placing? But they've actually turned. You know, they are profit from what I believe now. The last accounts was marginal. An operational level, it was making break even essentially, and they wrote off a load of the historic assets, and now they should be profitable. Everything points to them, they're trading profitably from there, and I think it will still go well. I think the sentiment around management might hold it back for a little while. I think people will want to see a set of accounts that shows it cash generative.
Okay, so let me just backtrack a little bit. Of all the companies that are on AIM, the FTSE,
yeah,
how and why did you go Harvest Minerals? What was it about that, or what did you see, what triggered your interest in that company?
So for that one, it's again a case, initially the reason I looked at it again was because I'd held it before, and I'd watched it for years.
I'm on about the very, very, very first time, Ben,
The very first time I got caught up, I would say, in the hope, hype and potential, because they were essentially going to sell a product at that cost them $10, say, to produce, US dollars to produce, and they were going to sell it at 60 at the time. I think that was their original PR. And then why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you buy things? Buy a bag of fertilizer for $10, you can sell it at 60. You know, why wouldn't you do that? I forgot, and what they probably didn't inform the market either, or ever point out at some point, it's going to take quite a while to build up. You don't open the doors to a shop and a customer stream in very often, unless you've already got a brand there. So I think a contract went sour early. So that's what attracted me early doors was, well, wait a minute, they're making X amount on every sale. This is a no-brainer. It wasn't a no-brainer. it took time. So yeah, that's what attracted me originally.
Oh, brilliant. No, I love that response. Have you got any other questions, Pete? I'm going to ask something else in a minute.
This is a quick hello to you, our valued Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener. Whatever channel you're listening to, please make sure to subscribe and you'll always be the first to get the new episodes. Thank you for your continued support.
Well, sort of linked around that, what tends to get you into a particular stock these days?
So what gets me into a stock?
What sort of particularly attracts you about a stock in general these days? I mean, obviously, it's got to be in the sort of mining space. Are there particular metals that you tend to like? Or what's your sort of initial drivers to get interested in a company?
My initial drivers right at the moment, especially in the last 12 months, have been knowing the company for quite a while. So actually knowing it and having followed it for ages, it'd be very difficult to look at a company just blind now and take any real interest, because everything's just so unpredictable that it just takes a while to get to know. I want to see a good management team that have delivered on their promises over time, some direction. I want to see a project that has massive, it's got to be a massive upside from where they sit at the moment, but also have a capex, a resource cost that isn't eye-watering. I think everyone will remember Sirius Minerals, for example, and they got the whole country, whole of Yorkshire was investing in it, I think it was at some point. But but the scary thing there, and the scary thing that put me off now, that I think the capex was they needed 2 billion to make the project, because construct the project and construct the mine. Where is a tiddly little AIM company going to get $2 billion from? The economics will always be attractive on those things, but that's where I look at it. It's got to be fun. You've got to believe these projects can be funded. And you've got to understand that would not happen quickly. Most of my holdings I've been in for years, I wouldn't have intended to spend as much time I have in them, because you just learn, it just takes time. And it's got to be realistic. It's not to say that someone can't fund a project. Someone won't get that billion dollars of funding they need. But often there's a chance, if someone's got a really high risk, high capex project, you can afford to wait and have a look at it after they get the funding. You might give a bit of upside away, but your risk is so much lower, and that's why I don't think people necessarily always understand or realize or prepared to willing to listen to. So yeah, good management team, insider ownership's key. If you haven't got skin in the game, if you're not going to put your money in where your mouth is, if you've got a company worth 25 million and you see the director or CEO owning 0.1%, it's not going to be for me. And that's, again, not to say companies can't do well from there, but again, it's just a risk I don't need. That's some of the things. There's knowing the project for a while, liking the space it's in, liking the jurisdiction, the country it's in. There's some countries you wouldn't touch with a barge pole, and I'm not particularly risk averse in that way, but others are.
You've covered most of them there. I'm going to ask you this question anyway. You've covered quite a few. But for you in that space, what are the two main red flags when you go, I'm out of here, or I'm not going to proceed with buying that particular stock in that resource? What are the two big ones for you then?
I think the two big ones for me are, like I said, the high capex. But if it's many multiples of their market cap, where are they getting... They're not holding the poker. They're going to the poker table with either playing blind or with the worst hand you've seen. Not to say they can't win, but it's going to be difficult. And the second is management that don't fulfill their promises. If they've got a track record of lying, of fundraisers, of mistruths, why take the risk? There's so many opportunities out there. You just don't need to get involved. They're characters that have been around the long market. And I've got a couple of them. Within my companies that I hold, I've got a couple of directors that are characters. But you've got to look at the whole picture. And if you're expecting a bit of a maverick to fund a £1 billion project or a £500 million project, it's going to be tough. And I don't need that risk.
Yeah, cool. That makes sense.
Okay, so we've covered the resource side of it. I know you've got some other stocks in other sectors away from it. So you've So brilliant in diversifying over the past few years, mate. But talk to me about some of those and what led you to go into that sector away from the resource space. And, you know, and what led to the filtering for you to identify that one particular stock or two particular stocks outside of resources?
Yeah, that's what I'll talk about. Well, actually, I'm only holding one outside of the sector at the moment, just because I'm especially crop concentrated. But I do look, you know, I'm resource-based, heavily resource-based. I have always looked outside of that. There's lots that catches my eye. But my one at the moment that you've covered recently yourself is litigation capital management.
We can't talk about that, mate. People will say we're ramping, mate.
No, and
go on.
Yeah, it's a great example. Let's stay away from the company case, because actually we don't need to look at that. But the reason I got in was because I've worked in the sector. So it is in litigation funding, but I worked in the sector for 4 years. And, you know, it's one of the specialisms in insolvency, which I've worked in for 16 years. So that's what attracted me there, because I understood it, because I've had exposure to the sector. I've worked in it. I understand how it operates. I understand the challenges. And I think it's been a sector that's been pinned down quite a lot after what happened with the Muddy Waters short report on Burford. That's hung over the sector now for what we're looking at, I think 2018 that was. So probably 4 years that's hung over the sector.
August 2018, because I remember it well. I remember that well because it was around my dad's birthday, mate. And I was like, I'm out of here. I heard the name Muddy Waters and I just went, bang, sell it, mate. I was out.
Yeah, and it's one of those, you know, it was a PI favorite. It was such an acclaimed stock. And looking back, it's such a difficult sector. And I know that from working in it. So that's what got me involved. So I think a lot of people, it's not a bad way to start, is if you understand the sector to get involved. If you've got some understanding of what's going on, build on that. Don't shy away from it. Sometimes you can be too close to it. But you know, that same reason to move away from our mutual holding is the same reason that I won't touch the likes of Begbies and FRP. They're quite well touted recently in the insolvency sector, because having worked in it, I'm still not convinced that professional services firms work as listed entities. I might be proved wrong. The whole sector seems to be changing over time, where people are prepared to work a listed model. But having worked in the sector, what tends to find is you get really busy peaks and your best talent then leave to set up their own shop, because they can't make the earnings they could make as partners. So they go and start again and to make the big money for the busy period. And that's always my concern. And my concern is, you know, staff costs are always going to be huge, you know, for these businesses. So when they're making bumper profits, how much that bumper profit is ever going to get down to the shareholders? I'm not sure. And it might change. It might be a point where I look at it and go, actually, it's working now, or the whole market's changed because they want to be part of a salaried environment. But it's not for me, despite the fact that I work in the sector day in, day out. You know, it's my day job.
I think it makes sense, because I think what you tend to find with anything to do with insolvency, it is very much about the economic cycle. You know, when times are bad, times are tough, you are going to get more insolvency. It's been slightly weird in the last decade or so, when we've had artificially low interest rates and things, which I think has kept a lot of zombie companies going. But even in normal times, you would get that cyclicality of the economy, which is going to drive to a large extent. You know, it's like we're saying with miners, isn't it? It's like with the miners, they do well when their underlying metals are doing well. Companies do well when oil's going up. And it's, you know, there's all these cyclical things kicking around, and litigation is just another.
Yeah, and I don't think for a second, you know, don't touch these companies. It is more of a case of, you know, just be careful. I think it's going to get busy. We know there is a lot of companies in a lot of distress at the moment. We're waiting to get busy, but we've been waiting for 2 years now. And what I found, and you look at the chart of Begbies, for example, they've tended to make in bumper times, made some poor acquisitions, and maybe it will be different this time. They haven't been listed for donkey's years. But it is a difficult space to operate in, and you're putting a lot of faith in them getting their strategy right and putting those profits to good use, and retaining their staff. And they're all difficult factors that I'm probably not qualified to judge, and that's why I kind of stay away from them.
I, as you know, I've entered the space with regards to Lit and another company, and my view was we're going through this high inflation. We're possibly going to go through a recession. Pete's touched on zombie companies. And therefore, there's going to be more and more people falling out and other companies going under and causing all kinds of flux. So I felt, you know, two companies I've chosen, one of them being Lit, would be resilient. We don't know. Could do quite well over the next few years. Don't know. But I'm taking an early mover sort of position in both of those stocks with the view that in 2 years' time, if we get a bumper sort of situation for either of those two stocks, I should be okay. But it's one of those things, Ben, you know, I'm looking for stocks at the minute that I think will do okay over the next 2 or 3 years. The recession, the inflation, the interest rates, we don't know where they're going to go. I mean, what I did before we started the show, I put a little tweet out and I asked some people to send me some questions in because of your job and because of Wheelie's constantly reading the Shares magazine and Investors Chronicle. So these are the questions we got posed, Ben. So fire in, please, with me regarding this, yeah?
Okay.
So this is from Raj, okay? His first question, one of the first questions we're going to answer here is, what are the best indicators to suggest Mr. Market might think a bottom is near? No rudeness, Wheelie, before you answer this.
Well, if I'm going to answer it, I'll be saying look for very, very low RSIs. And the one that I think tends to be best for a sort of long-term market bottom is the weekly RSI. When that gets really low, relative strength indicator or relative strength index. So I really like that one. The other one is what we say about capitulation. You know, you need to get to that stage where things are utterly horrific. If you think you've had it bad this year, we have had it bad. It's not been an easy market by any means. Mm. But I don't think we've had a capitulation yet. And when it happens, it will be extremely unpleasant. And you'll be seeing every stock in your portfolio falling 6%, 7%, 8%. When that happens, that usually marks the bottom.
Okay. Ben, any thoughts?
No, it's similar lines. I mean, I'm not so good on my technicals as both of you guys, really. But one thing is, if you're looking across... I've got, say, 60 companies on my watch list. If you're seeing a sea of red across them and your portfolio and everywhere else you look, and then a significant red, not the one or two, but you are looking the 5, 6, 7, and in the smaller caps, that'll be 10, 15, 20 with the lack of liquidity in them and the way they move. You know, if you're starting to see that, then maybe that is a sign that there is a bottom coming. And I think Wheelie's right. We haven't seen that yet. It's been horrible, but it's been a real grind. There have been some bad days in there, but we haven't seen the sort of moves we saw in March 20, for example, where there were days where toys were being thrown out of the bath, you know. And
Babies so, yeah. have been thrown out of baths, mate.
Yeah.
The bath was being thrown out.
Yeah, the shower and everything. So yeah, I think that's probably one of the signs for me.
Yeah, I was going to add regarding the numbers, the retail numbers. So producer price index and purchasing managers index, when they start to go back up again and start to show a bit of positivity, that may be another indication that the markets are probably bottom. But we're talking about stocks, so you and Pete are absolutely spot on regarding, you know, people are going, open the laptops, shut the laptops and off for the day. Because, you know, going back to 2000 and 2016 as well, when we saw those mornings where we were going, what? You know, or after the Brexit vote, we saw stocks dropping 5, 6, 7, 8%. It, you know, FTSE 350 stocks were doing that. That's when, you know, as Pete spoke about, the capitulation. Once that's happened, you've had that washout. That could be a time, you know, you think maybe it's over yet. But, you know, as I keep saying, we're in a bear market. We're going to have some rallies as well. And sometimes, you know, we haven't quite reached the bottom. So we'll see. Okay. We have a question from Andrea at Andromeda 8 Music. What sectors do you think will be affected What sectors do you think will be affected the least by inflation and rising interest rates? Question. Or sectors that may even benefit from either of these? Or those. Any thoughts? Ben, do you want to go first? Or Wheelie, go first?
Yeah, we touched on one, which I think is litigation funding. You know, that's an uncorrelated asset. Doesn't mean it can do extremely well. But, you know, in volatile times, there'll be a lot of people making mistakes. That they will take it, these funds will take advantage of. And it's a bigger and better understood industry, or it's getting a better, more understood. So I think that's one of them. Yeah, it's a difficult question. I'll hand over to Wheelie.
I love it. I think, and the obvious answer is all the commodity stuff. You know, when inflation's rife and it's driven by commodity prices, then, you know, you still want exposure to miners and oil and all that kind of stuff. Having said that, you know, I think we have had a big run up in those. And I mentioned on a podcast we did recently that I think people need to think about their exposure to those sectors. And if they are, in, you know, not like Ben who's focused in the one sector, but if you are more of a spread of sectors in your portfolio, if your mining and your oil has done really well, then maybe we've had a lot of the gains already, and we need to sort of think about that. But I mean, the other one is just, you know, something that will do well is something that doesn't fall. And you know, things like a lot of the pharmaceuticals and drug stocks, you know, even defense companies have probably still got a pretty good future. We've talked about these a lot on the podcasts. And, you know, I still think those kind of sectors look quite nice. But it's difficult in most sectors. The problem is, a lot of stocks at the moment, they look cheap. You look at, if you just did it on a numerical basis, you look at the forward PEs, you look at the forward dividends, you look at, you think, God, that's looking really cheap. The trouble is, it's not cheap when the earning, you know, profit warning comes out and suddenly the earnings collapse. And I think we're still going to see a lot of profit warnings. And I think up until now, for me personally, my own portfolio, I haven't had that many profit warnings, and that surprises me. I've got a horrible feeling I've got a shock coming. So because
we'll talk about some of those profit warnings in a minute. What are we going to say with this? And obviously, I saw these questions earlier, and you guys have not had chances. It's a bit, you know, for me. So what I've written here is that the past 6 months, the energy related that you've touched on, Pete, yeah, have benefited from the inflation rising and interest rates rising. And the three stocks I picked out, and I think we've covered most of them, bar one, is BP. That's up 23%. Total returns over the past 12 months, 27%. Shell up 38%. You know, a blue chip company up 38% in 12 months. Total returns, 42%. Wait for this one now. Unloved. Nobody wanted to know of it. Everyone hated the stock. Centrica, 60% in 12 months. Doesn't even pay a dividend.
Wow.
All right. So energy related stocks have outperformed so far. I think they've still continue, Pete. I think irrespective of crude oil, to use a crude word, has gone dipped a little bit recently and then gone back up a little bit. We're not going to see the price at the pump drop 20% when crude drops 20%. So I think those companies are still going to carry on. I think Ben, if he picks one that actually, you know, says we found oil, you know, it's going to absolutely just, you know, and equally with the miners, because of their energy costs that's going into drilling that hole or all the different capex, I think they could suffer. You know, I own Rio, you own Glen, you know, we've all got some mining stocks scattered all over the place. Their costs could go up for all the drilling and all the rest of it, the mining they've got to do. So, you know, the positives will be energy related and possibly utilities, because it's passed the cost forward, don't they? Water companies just passed, say, look, we don't care. You know, your water bill's your water bill, mate. You have to do that or you don't wash. You know, just go on, go solid. Right. We're not going to answer this question, but it's from Pete at PMAC295. What are your thoughts on investing more into your pension as a higher rate taxpayer above your employer's matched contribution, even though you might believe that you will exceed the current lifetime allowance? Also, similar theme regarding long-term ISA versus SIP in the same scenario where you believe the lifetime allowance will be exceeded. My reply for all of us, Pete, is go and speak to an IFA. We cannot answer that question for you because that would be giving you advice. Sorry, mate.
And to be fair, right, if it helps them as well, if you go anywhere near Shares Magazine, I get it free because I use AJ Bell. They cover a lifetime allowance question every other week. Just run through their archives. They answer so many questions to get a better understanding. And then, like you said, then go and talk to an IFA, because it's that's a tough, that's a complicated question with well above our pay grade.
I agree. I love that reply from you, Ben. Thank you very much. Right, I think it's another one from I think it was from Raj again. Gold has traditionally been viewed as a defensive asset in times of volatility. So why haven't gold stocks held up? My reply to that is gold mining companies, all-in costs have increased. Anybody else want to add anything to that?
No, I'd agree. I mean, there's two aspects of that. The first thing is gold does traditionally do well, but it doesn't do it well normally immediately. I think back in March 20, it went down with the rest of the world. It wasn't a safe haven for those first few months, and then it shot up well. But you're right, the all-in sustaining costs, there are some absolute shockers out there. A company I used to be invested in, I think their all-in sustaining costs came at near around 2,000 in their last update. You know, they're making a loss on the gold they're mining, and the energy costs can't help them. You know, and there's a lot going up, and gold's coming in the same time coming back to coming down. So they're two terrible factors. I think if the world stays volatile, gold will do well. But you've got to be very, very selective of your miners. You've got to make sure they can keep their costs down, because there's some horrible, horrible figures out there if you spend any time looking at some of the juniors.
Good call.
Whether you are an experienced or new investor, you know how valuable it is to conduct portfolio enhancing analysis and to have easy access to data that will give you the edge. As a Twin Peaks Investing podcast listener, you can access an exceptional offer via ShareePad from ShareScope, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. This special Twin Peaks offer is available to new subscribers only, and you can subscribe using the promo code TWINPEETS. The incredible and exclusive offer means that monthly subscribers will get their second month free, and annual subscribers will get their 13th month free. Sign up and subscribe to ShareePad today using the Twin Peaks promo code, and you can save up to £69. Visit sharescope.co.uk/sharepad for further details and subscribe to the investing and trading analysis and data you need.
And now, Pete and I talked about this months ago when the Ukraine things kicked off, and we were warning people. We're saying, look, have a look at your exposure. Have a look at where your company is. Have a look if it's got any sort of things interrelated with Russia. Just be mindful. Be mindful. Please go and have a look at your portfolio. What's happened this week? Was it yesterday? I think it was yesterday, maybe Monday. One of the largest gold mining stocks that we had, right? Worth several billion X amount of years ago. It's just gone, boop, 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 boop. Warned and warned and warned and warned and warned. Despite all the warnings, lots of other people, Ben, in the murky side of all the different markets, have been ramping this stock for the past 12 months, right? What stock am I talking about? Peter Ambro, now known as Petropavlos, ticker symbol POG. Gone. Breached its covenants again, debt and not being able to pay, or someone else is saying, oh, we'll loan you this money, you need to pay it back under these sort of metrics, and then all different circumstances collide. You've got one of the largest companies that, you know, family owned company back in the day, one of them that everybody went, Ambrose, the name you want, gold name you can trust, gone. Absolutely staggering.
You know? And the key factor there is debt. You know, I've seen that happen so much. I mean, I think it was McCoy's recently, the news agent brand that was linked with Morrison.
McCall's. Yeah. You're thinking of the crisps, but you're getting hungry, Ben.
always hungry. But look at them. People were pushing that quite heavily. You know, Morrison's are going to get in there. But the debt was horrific, and in these turbulent times, you don't want to be playing with debt. Unless you're willing to take the risk. Some people will take advantage of some of these situations. I can't think of anything worse. There's just so much risk. And if you owe multiples of your market cap, you're exposed again. You're going into a game of poker with terrible cards. You're going to have to bluff very well to get out of it. Just don't touch it. Just don't touch it would be my advice. But know what you do. Know what you're getting into.
Absolutely. Now, I think Pete's got this stock, and I've pronounced it wrong the podcast, so I'll get the pronunciation of this correct. And I know he's quite pleased with what's going on at the minute. Let's talk about a bit of positive news in the market. there seems to be a wrestle, a saga, a fight, a battle, a punching match here going on between two companies. Kistoff, is that pronounced correct? And Serica, right? One's bidding for the other one. The other one's saying your offer's too low. We'll buy you instead. What, Pete, it's your start. What's going on here?
Yeah, I mean, I hold Serica Energy, SQZ. They got approached by Kistos, K-I-S-T, and Kistos made an offer to actually buy Serica. Serica said, no, that's too low, whatever. And then Serica put in their own bid for Kistos. So Serica mainly operates in the North Sea, and it's got lots of gas, and it's actually producing, pays, I think it's predicted to pay a pretty juicy dividend, like 4%, something like that. And it, you know, so it's sort of got itself established. It's got operation. It's got potential. Is it North Ige, I think, is the next potential oil well that it's going to, it's just spudded. So it's just started digging into it, whatever. And it should have a result of that fairly soon. And if obviously if that's a good result, then that will be more good news for the share price. So, you know, so it's, yeah, I'm really pleased with how it's going, and I'm very happy to see the bid come along. The bid that was done by Kistos for SQZ was a lot higher than the current share price. From memory, it was like
£3.82 was the all-in price combination, a 25% premium.
Yeah, so, you know, and yeah, you know, at the end of the day, Kistos wouldn't have offered best part of £4 if they think it's really worth five or, you know, if they're offering £4, they really think it's worth five or six. So, you know, I'm very happy to hang on.
SQZ has got loads of cash, hasn't it? How much cash has it got?
I think it's okay for cash. I wouldn't have said it had loads of cash, but I think it's okay for cash. It's in a good position. Mm. And the main thing is it's producing now, and it's producing a lot of gas. So, you know, I think Kistos was more in a situation where it's got North Sea assets. From memory, I think it is actually producing, but it's certainly not in the situation SQZ is in.
Following the story at all, Ben? Are you following it, Ben?
No, I followed a little bit, and I think I can't remember who the CEO of Kistos is, but wasn't he involved in he was involved in a company that got taken over before, and he's a bit of an empire builder, if I remember correctly. So this seems like a move to start empire number two. But I can't life of me remember what the company was called.
There's a Rock Rose connection in there somewhere, I believe.
That's it, yes.
Okay. All right. So I did the other night, I put something on Twitter, and I was asking a few people to just comment on it. And we've got @JohnM_AIM, and he basically said, believe offer for SQZ is too low, and hopefully a better offer will be put forward. Recent 52-week high was £4.20, so I'm hoping for a price nearer to that. What's frustrating is that the North Eag drill, if successful, could be material to SQZ. Mm. And then you've got another chap @Gartoff726. Those numbers, I never read those out. In which case, SQZ won't do a deal. By the time this all plays out, North Eag will either be known or there is a strong indication. As long as SQZ isn't boxed in, they can simply not engage with any suitors. Easy, really. All assumed shareholders don't wish to pursue. Warren, @WarrensBuffett2, nice name. I hold both, and I suspect a merged company would have a market cap twice that of SQZ and KIST as of today. So mixed, really. So you think it's going to be another offer coming, Pete?
I've no idea. The simple way I look at it is that it was a stock I like without a takeover. If there's a takeover, maybe it's a bonus. If the takeover's too low, it's a pain in the butt it, because they're taking a good stock away from me. So, you know, I'm pretty happy just to sit tight and just watch it all play out.
Cool. Right, we're back to profit warnings. Impact.
Tickets I hold this one.
MPEC. And on Monday, again, very loved by lots of people talking about it. It was doing really well last year. It continued to do well for a little while. And then all of a sudden, the share price is just gone. So we've got a 52-week high of £6.65 in September of last year. Last Wednesday, a week ago, £3.95. Today, closed at £2.30.
Yeah, I mean, what's happened there is, it's what I was saying to you before about how I think there's going to be a lot of companies coming out with profit warnings. And I think MPAC was sort of a profit warning waiting to happen. And I actually had a very, very oversized position in MPAC. I went extremely heavy on it several years ago when it was really very low. And it was just obviously stupidly undervalued because it, from memory, it had effectively cash of 30 million and the market cap was sort of 28 million. So you could actually spend, you could spend less on the company than the actual cash was worth, which was just an absurd situation. At the same time, as you had new managements who had all that good stuff happening. So I went really heavy on it, rode it up pretty well. And I did pretty well with top slicing it and getting the position down, back down to a sensible size. And I got it down to a sensible size. In fact, you know, much, much, much smaller size. I think I went from, I probably had as much as, at the peak, I probably had like 8% of my portfolio, which is a hell of a lot.
That is a lot for you, mate.
In a small stock. And I trimmed it right back to about 2%, I think. It's all on my website. So I trimmed it right back because I thought, yes, MPAC, great company. I'm quite happy to stay invested with it. I love what it's doing in robots and automation and all that kind of stuff. It's a real business that sells things and whatever. But it just struck me that with all this bad news around and the potential for inflation and all the rest of it, you know, and they said in the update, you know, that the cost of distribution and all the rest of it has been more expensive than they expected. I think the revenues actually still grew. So the demand is there for what they do. But the problem is it's now costing them more to service that demand. So, you know, it was sort of bound to happen, really.
Is it one you've looked at, Ben, or no, or are you aware of?
Yeah, it's one I've followed for quite a while. Because like you said, it gets a lot of mentions. So you do get drawn in, just have a look at the story. And, you know, the market's so harsh. It, you know, it's one little slip up and it, you know, sitting across it, I've seen it in my own portfolio. There's no room for error. You know, the slightest doubt, and I think it opened up 30%, and it didn't come back from that.
Yeah.
You would have previously seen, you might have seen a 30% drop, but you would have seen it settle at 10-15% down by the end of the day. These type of news because people see past it at the moment. They don't. It's brutal. Like Willie said, I did wonder with stocks like that. You know, if you got exposure to either rising costs or any form of the consumer, then you're going to be in trouble in the coming while. We've seen it with the likes of JD Sports and things like that, previously really, really big names. And the market doesn't like them at the moment, and any bad news into already bad sentiment is not going to end well in the short term. And what you're going to make sure, I think anyone out there is going to make sure, and what I didn't do recently was manage your position size, like Willie's done there. You've actually managed your position size, so you stay invested in something you really like for the long term, but you don't get that point where you get a big wedge of your portfolio sort of shaved off in an instance, because it's not going to come back for a while.
Yeah, exactly. I mean
Pete, I'm just going to say, one of the things that we've mentioned over and over and over again here, and Pete touched on it regarding the profit warnings keep coming, right, is this issue about supply chain and operational challenges. The CapEx, almost every company out there is seeing the cost of doing business rising. So if you think your company is fine just because its revenues are increasing, it is not going to be fine. There's certain companies where the revenue is going to increase, their CapEx and all their other operational costs have stayed the same. They'll be fine. But if your revenues are going up and it's being matched by the increase in other things, you're not going to be able to make the profitability that you made before. And we've stressed on this before. So just please, ladies and gents, go and have a look at your portfolio, have a look at the company, what it says, what costs do they have? Is it electric stuff that's going in? Is it copper costs? You know, is it fuel costs? Have a look at all the different parameters. Is it shipping costs? That's causing or potentially could cause them. Because there'll be, as Pete says, and as Ben says, there's going to be more profit warnings coming. You know, touched on another stock here. I think we touched on it once, Pete, ages ago. CMO, the material building company. And today, yeah, down 40%. It floated last year. It's down 76% since it floated last July. So the other thing to look at in your portfolio is, did you buy one of those red hot IPOs from 2021? Because they might have IPO'd for a reason to get out of jail and make as much money as they possibly could. And now the share prices are going like that. And we're heading, for all intents and purposes, everyone's talking about a potential recession. So how are these stocks that did well during lockdown going to do if we hit the buffers with a recession? So just be very mindful out there.
We've got like a wedge situation going on where, actually, I don't know if I can work the wedge out, but basically where, you know, we've just talked there about the cost side of the equation increasing and therefore squeezing your profit margin, even if you're rising your revenue. But what we haven't mentioned is that you've also got this massive risk that your revenues will come under pressure. So if you've got your revenues squeezing and your costs going up, you're in the jaws of a pretty nasty profit warning. And I think we're going to see that in a lot of cases.
Agreed. Any thoughts, Ben, on that? And is it what? Let me ask you a different question, sorry. We talk about the CapEx costs going up. We very rarely talk about, and you touched on a little bit there when you talked about the litigation side of it, the cost of employees. Not many people think about this, but everybody, you know, we can talk about it a little bit now. Postal workers, barristers, rail workers and people working in the industry in the railway sector are going on strike because saying, I want better pay. Paying conditions because my cost of my living is going up, so why shouldn't I get paid?
No, absolutely, it's a real risk. I mean, in my sector, insolvency, I think you've seen some of the top four. I think PwC gave a 10% rise to all staff. Well, who's paying that 10%? And does that then force some of the listed models to actually have to put wages up by 6, 7, 8%? Does it put that pressure on? Where you're going to, you know, the audit work, for example, is still as competitive as ever. You know, you can pass on some of this, but are you going to pass on the whole 10%? I don't know. But the staff, anything that's staff intensive and anything consumer facing, it's a real risk. And I think Winnie touched on a good point there as well about revenues can drop, especially if it's consumer facing. I think it was it Supreme recently had a profit warning. That's an IPO that looked brilliant. From when they started, it looked brilliant. It looks an exciting, interesting company, but they got hit in their lighting division, I think, because all their suppliers overbought back in the pandemic because everyone was upgrading their lighting in the house, and now they're facing not selling as much. They're going to miss a season of sales. Perhaps we didn't see that. We should have seen that coming, but people didn't see that coming. That so many months ago. And if their staffing costs are going up the same way, it's just all compounding factors.
I think really hard to see these sort of things. I mean, overstocking as a concept, we can talk about overstocking and whatever, but I think actually identifying it in a stock is actually a lot harder to do, especially when a lot of the management are sort of hiding it anyway. You know, they hide it for as long as they can, and they get the point like, okay, we got to put a warning out. We can't hide it anymore. And I think that, well, it's not just the management, it's the accountancy department is doing that. They're stretching the numbers every month to try and hit the targets that the management are demanding of them. And it just gets to a point you can't keep stretching that piece of elastic, you know?
Absolutely. Pete, I'm going to take a quick break here and just ask you to quickly have a look at the backup charity, what's happened, made any donations. You don't need to go through all
I need to cover as well. So what we'll say quickly is that we tend with the podcast to get behind a particular charity. This year we're back in the Backup Trust, which is spinal injury charity. I know a lot about them because I'm spinally injured and they do some fantastic stuff with kids and whatever, and all about sort of rehabilitation, getting people skiing, whatever. If you can donate something, that would be fantastic. On my website, if you go to Wheelie Dealer 2 website, go to the Twin Peaks Investing podcast page, and right at the top, it's got a link that will get you there. I'll send something out on Twitter anyway, you know, over the coming weeks, whatever, where you can make a donation. The other thing I really wanted to mention, this is something I really wanted to get in. SharePad, who sponsor our podcast and have done for ages, thank you, SharePad, magic stuff. They are doing a special 25th anniversary offer. Now, if you go to the homepage on my website, which is www.wheeliedealer.weebly.com, I've put all of the details with all the T's and C's and the ins and the outs and whatever right at the top of that page. If you're interested in using SharePad or SharePad Pro, I think it's a 25% off deal that you can get on it. Go on the thing and you can read it all there. You have to sign up exactly as it says on the things. Don't use the links that are normally around. And you've got until the 31st of August to sign up to it. And it's basically to celebrate 25 years of Ionic Information, who are the company behind SharePad. And of course, before they were behind ShareScope, and they still do ShareScope. The offer doesn't extend to ShareScope.
Okay, I'll be adding that link and the details on my website, and the first tweet that goes out will have a link to all of that as well. Thank you for that. I want you to close. We're at 70 minutes in, guys, and I do not want to do 90 minutes. I don't want it to be a football game or a cinema ticket where people have to get to actually listen to this particular podcast. I wanted to use the latter part of this for each of us to share one share that we don't currently own. If you can think of one, Ben, that you actually saw or you've looked at or you've got on your watch list, you think, actually, that's quite interesting. I can start this because I've already written a little bit of notes on here, very briefly, scant notes. And we're in the summer. Everyone's thirsty. People are either going to the pub or they're not going to the pub. But I've chosen this company because it's a universal company that can be drank by all ages. And that's a company which we've all known, and we can go back to it back in the day. And it is AG Bar. The ticker symbol is BAG, bag. And it is synonymous with the Scottish fizzy drink, Iron Brew, and also good old Tizer, but it also does soft drinks as well. And it's been creeping up. I've just been seeing the stocks creep up over the last month or so. And it's obviously, you know, summer temperature, are people drinking more, or are they just managing their cost flow and everything else a bit better? We've got a share price, 52-week range of £4.625 back to November of last year, and a high of £5.95 in May of this year. And the current price is around £5.50 from when I looked at it earlier. And the PE is still quite high, but the yields look small, yield of 2%. But I thought it was interesting that despite all the noise and all the difficulties the markets have got, and the spirits companies like Diageo and others, I've been wilting. We've got a little fizzy drinks company that's sitting there going, all of a sudden it's going like that, the charts. Market's going like that, and you've got a little fizzy drinks company nudging up. I don't own it.
Oh,
on my watch list. But I just thought it was interesting.
Oh.
Sorry, Ben, go ahead.
You froze there, mate. You froze on me.
What was I saying about bag, in the sense of over the past year or so, it seems to be creeping up. In the past month or so, it's been creeping up whilst the market has been going that way. Despite the markets, it's actually been going against the market and actually going up. So at £5.50, P is a bit high, yield's only small, but I just thought it was an interesting one for people to keep an eye on and maybe research. I don't own it. It's on my watch list, but I just thought it'd be interesting to share with people. Do you have one, Pete or Ben?
Well, one that struck me that might be worth a look. Computer Center, CCC, put out results today. From memory, I think they're okay. But I just want to mention one that's in the same sector, and that is Kitwave, K-I-T-W. It struck me as very much a similar kind of thing to Computer Center. I literally know nothing about it. I just think it could be an interesting stock for people to look into.
We spoke about that a couple of podcasts back, though, Pete. We did.
Oh, did we? Yeah. Okay, well, that's...
We did.
Okay,
if
that's what it's like, I'll give you another one.
That's fine. Ben, have you got anything that you've got on your watch list and your radar that you thought, actually, I'm keeping my eye on that one, and these are the reasons why?
Yeah, one of them slipped back on my radar. It's one I held previously, and I don't hold it at the moment. It's a company called Horizonte Minerals. A nickel developer. And the interesting one, it touches on what I talked about earlier. It was actually a project that required a lot of capex. And in my humble opinion, they gave away a lot of the upside when they did the deal for the capex. So it wasn't a lot of good stuff there for shareholders. But it's got really interesting. They did a share consolidation recently, and it's gone. I think when they consolidated, it consolidated from 7p to about 140p, and it's back down to about 100p, so 5p in old money. And I think it's really interesting. The nickel space looks really interesting long term. It is fully funded. There's a management team there that have always delivered on what they said they would. There's been some delays along the way. It's been a rocky ride, but they've delivered all the way through. And if you're looking for something that is a year or two, I can't remember when they're away from actually producing, but they're fully funded, the risks shouldn't be there. They've got contingency, they generally plan well. And there's another little interesting aspect to it. You've got a potentially very interesting sort of tier one nickel project coming online. And they've also got a second tier one project, potential tier one project in the background that they're doing a project on. So you've got a bit of a safety net with their main asset, as safe as a developing nickel mine in Brazil can ever be. Mm. You've also got a bit of a wild card where there is a second project that they might go and get a partner for or do something else. So it's one just worth watching at the moment.
For our listeners, our newbie listeners, Ben, your very layman's term explanation of tier one, please.
Oh, sorry. Yes. Yeah. So tier one is going to be one of the biggest nickel producing mines out there. So your tier ones, it's just one of the largest projects. I can't remember if it's technically will be classed as a tier one, but it's in that criteria. It's going to be a significant producing mine. So it's not, for example, a piddly gold mine in out of Siberia. It's going to be significant, and they've got a second one there that could also be significant, but is a long way behind. So it's a bit of a wild card, just something for someone to look at that isn't necessarily some of the risk I normally look at. So it's something to explore.
Thank you for that explanation, mate. Thank you. Wheely, do you want to add one last stock, or do you want to say anything in closing, mate? Because I know you were like, oh, kick wave, and then I said no, we've already had it, so threw you a little bit.
Well, yeah, I mean, the only one
of them from it, I'm being told to warn you not to keep giving us Investors Chronicle tips, mate. So find one that you don't have classic taken from a magazine.
Well, I'll just mention another stock that I think had some news yesterday. And again, I got a horrible feeling. I might have mentioned it on a podcast recently, but that is Concurrent Technology, CNC.
You have not.
Did I mention
you
it?
Have not mentioned that. You've not mentioned that recently, mate.
Oh, brilliant. I've not mentioned it. Okay, well, that's good then. So CNC, Concurrent Technologies, it does printed circuit boards, and it does like quite ruggedized ones in defense and medical things and whatever. And I think it's one of these companies where the PCBs, the printed circuit boards, gets designed into a particular product. So once a sort of company, like a medical devices company, I think they just won a contract with someone in America, like a big Fortune 500 US medical tech company from memory. So they design it into the product. And then obviously, you know, CNC have then got a nice revenue stream for quite some time, you know. So I think it's a really interesting company. I don't hold it. It's quite small, I think. I'm not sure what the market cap is. It's certainly not a massive one, but you know, little ones can be interesting stocks. So yeah, it's got a market cap of about £60 million.
That's around the size that Ben likes, mate. 60 million, small and neat, compact, and with room to grow, as they say. You can hold on forever if they actually have good management and can execute. Then why not become a £100 million market cap or £200 million market cap company, guys? We've done nearly 80 minutes. I think you've absolutely been fantastic, Ben. You smashed it. You've come on. You've dealt with us jumping all over the place and asking you loads of questions. Hey,
Ben is usually down the pub. He knows what I'm like.
Interruptions and jumping all over you as well. So, mate, very, very well done. Thank you for coming on. And hopefully
we can have you
back on here. Wheely, any closing comments?
No. You know, just remember at the end of the last podcast on TPI 78, I think it was. We talked about, you know, having some positive news. And I said, yes, this will pass. Well, my positive news today is that GDP was better than expected.
Good. Ben, what do you want to finish on, mate? What do you want to say to our listeners?
No, I just say thanks for having me on. And I think just keep your heads. I think to anyone, just keep your heads. Remember your investing is personal. You've got to remember your own risk. Remember your goals, and yeah, don't get pulled along by anyone else or what's happened out there. Just remember what you're in the game for, and what you're trying to do, and what your outlook is, short, medium, long term. What are your pressure points? Don't have sleepless nights. It's just not worth it. Life is far, far too short. So yeah, that's probably my main takeaway.
I'll keep asking people on Twitter to just be kind, Ben. There's too much rudeness, abruptness, negativity, people having a pop. Why? Just try it. If you've got nothing positive to say, don't say anything. You know, don't have a pop-up or take out the fact that your portfolio or someone else's portfolio is, you know, is doing better than yours. It's not a competition. Focus, as you said, on your own portfolio and how it's doing. You know, all right, ladies and gents, take care. God bless. Be kind. Do what you can in the community for others. And above all, stay safe. And it's going to be a heat wave coming up our way by the time this podcast goes out. So stay hydrated. Take care. God bless.
See ya. Cheers.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
This Twin Peaks Investing Podcast is brought to you in association with ShareePad from ShareScoop, the UK's number one investment data and analysis software for private investors and traders. Visit ShareScoop.co.uk and discover the advantage.